Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome into Redacted, everybody. This is Thursday, the 2nd of November. We appreciate you being here. Once again, you only get one host instead of two. My name is Natalie Morris, and Clayton is off for the evening. But we still have friends with us. We have David and Philip in the control room. Hello, David. Thank you for coming today.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We want to tell you that we have a lot of news for you to get to today. We're going to first talk about how the United States is ramping up for a war with Iran, a nuclear war, in fact, by passing a resolution through the House. Did you vote for a nuclear war with Iran? Because that's what your elected representatives want. We're also going to talk about a new program where the White House is going to tackle Islamophobia. How are they going to do that? With a peace initiative. That's a lie. I'm just kidding. Not at all like that. We're going to break down what they do, what they're going to do, what their plan is. Also, we're going to talk about how wind farms are killing wildlife, specifically whales, birds, bats. But is it worth it? Or is this the next big electric or, let's say, green initiative to flop? Because it's not actually a viable way to save the planet. Plus, we're going to talk about renaming birds because those birds are racist. They have racist names. So now there's a major initiative to change the name of birds. Just want to be clear, this is for the humans, not for the birds. This show is not for the birds. Thank you so much for watching. Redacted starts right now. Serious news, but I've brought some palate cleansers for the end of the show. Some things that maybe are a little bit less serious, a little bit more fun to talk about. Not the killing whales part. The killing whales part is definitely going to get your goat, so to speak. But, you know, that's the way it goes. The world is crazy right now, but hey, we have a new Beatles song out. We're towards the end of the week. Drink them if you got them. I have some seltzer here. So cheers. Hey, we have a daily newsletter I would love to tell you about. Our daily newsletter is at redacted.inc. This is something that Clayton and I work on every single day. I do most of the research and writing. He does a lot of the compiling of it. We make it sort of fun, but also it's meant to be a compendium to this show. So you go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and then you get every day. It's a free subscription. We do not upsell you. There's no level that you get more news other than less news. It's just totally free. It's a voluntary thing. And again, we try really hard to make it so that when you read it, you can decide for yourself what you think of these stories we're going to talk about based on original sources. We try really hard not to just link you to headlines or other people saying something, the best to the best of our ability, because that's how we do our journalism here. We don't read headlines and regurgitate them. We read headlines and then look for the original sourcing as close as we can get to it. So thank you so much for subscribing to the newsletter. It means a lot to us. It's a labor of love, just like this show. So once again, you have only one host today, and we're going to get through these stories. And I really appreciate you being here, being in the chat. If you subscribe to the show as well as to the newsletter. But if you subscribe to the show, free subscription on YouTube as well, your name will pop up on the board behind me, which you can sort of see, and on this lower third right here. So please hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and stay, because I cannot have Clayton thinking that you don't stick around if he's not here. Please stay for me. I did my best to put together a good show for you. I am committed to telling you the truth and only presenting things that I can verify or things that I have found for myself. This is not news that I like. If you want news that I like, you'd be at a completely different show. You'd be on a cooking show. But I'm not going to cook for you today. So let's get to the news, shall we? Well, did you vote for a war with Iran because your elected representatives did vote for a war with Iran? On Wednesday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed House Resolution 559, which paves the way for a war with Iran over nuclear weapons. So here is the bill. The resolution declares that it is the policy of the United States that a nuclear Islamic Republic of Iran is not acceptable. Okay. Interesting, right? So it's saying our marching orders from right now, we collectively have the value that we are going to do anything in our power to prevent Iran from having nuclear weapons, including, it says, all means possible. So what I think that means is militarily. We're going to get to that in a second. But I think it's interesting why we're singling out Iran here, because I want to ask this question. Why is nuclear acceptable for Israel? I think a lot of people don't talk about the fact that Israel has nuclear weapons. In fact, Scott Horton calls it one of the things that is least talked about but most known in Washington. Well, how do we know this? I'm going to introduce you to this guy. This is Mordecai Vanunu, if you don't know him. We know him because he's an Israeli whistleblower. In 1986, he revealed that he knew about Israel's nuclear program because he worked there to the British press. For doing this, he spent 18 years in prison, even though there's no specific law against what he did in Israel. He says while he was in prison, he was subjected to extreme cruelty, including solitary confinement. He says he thinks that was the case because he's a Christian, that he had it worse because of that. Now, in Israel, they call him a traitor, but Amnesty International has spoken out on his behalf. They call him a prisoner of conscience. Take a look at this. Now, even though he was released from prison in 2004, he was followed by the Israeli government and arrested several times for what they called parole violations when he gave interviews to foreign journalists, and he attempted to leave Israel. In fact, he has continued to ask to leave Israel, and they won't let him. He served another 6 months in prison for violating this parole in 2007 and was arrested again for another 3 months in 2010. He has since sought political asylum in Norway. The Norwegian government was about to grant it, but then they got nervous that they would make an enemy of Israel, so they revoked that invitation. Same story in Sweden. He's been trying to leave Israel for years, but the High Court continues to prevent that. Take a look at this article from 2019, when he was denied permission to leave. So he is being kept there against his will for violating no laws as a whistleblower. The international community calls him a whistleblower and says that he deserves protection. This is, as Americans, we have laws on our books that protect whistleblowers. This is one of our fundamental shared values, our core values, in order to prevent corruption. So if we really stand for democratic principles, wouldn't we stand for this guy and tell our bestie over there, Israel, you got to let him go. You got to let him go live his life. But he has not been allowed. Now, all this to say, we know that Israel has nukes. We have known that for a long time. So also, it is against the UN Charter of Disarmament to provide weapons to countries that have nuclear weapons. So why all this rhetoric about how we absolutely are afraid of nuclear weapons, but only from the people we see? So where go ahead, please.
I think it's hypocritical because we, the United States, are the only ones in the world that have actually used them on a civilization, on people.
Yes.
So why is it acceptable for us to have them? Like, the world should be trying to disarm us.
Absolutely, that's true. Good point. Don't go looking at our past, David, as actual proof. We like to think we're the moral authority here. So where is the House resolution on this? Instead, it focused on Iran this week, which has repeatedly said that it is enriching uranium for nuclear power. The House resolution says that the International Atomic Energy Agency, this initialism that I always get wrong, but I'm going to try, IAEA, confirmed in May of 2023 that Iran continues to enrich uranium to 60% purity. Okay, let's take a look at the IAEA for a second, but first let's look at the resolution, because it says here, whereas the IAEA investigators found uranium products enriched to 83.7% in January, okay, I'm not sure about that. Let's hang on to that for a second. And that enriched uranium to 90% is weapon grade. And that in January of 2023, Rafael Grossi, the IAEA director general, we've talked about him a lot, says one thing is true. They have amassed enough nuclear material for several nuclear weapons. Okay, keep in mind these dates, right? They're saying we knew this in January, and that's how long we've known that they did this. Now, the IAEA, this Rafael Grossi, is the same guy who just doesn't seem to know who's hitting the Zaporizhia power plant in what is now Russian-annexed, formerly Ukraine. They've been there, they've stationed people, they've seen the bombs, and they continue to say, we don't know. We know that it shouldn't be hit, but we don't know. So the IAEA, and especially Director Grossi, is not high on my list of people to trust. But still, let's pretend we do for a second. Because when he discussed this in March of 2023, he went to Iran and gave this press conference and was specifically asked about Iran enriching uranium to 60%. And his answer is very much, that's okay. See if you interpret it that way.
Have, for example, the enrichment activities up to 60% been in detail, technical detail, or have you been discussing this with the heads of state you have been meeting regarding that it is hardly to explain an enrichment program to this extent with a non-military enrichment program? Have they been able to give you an explanation for that?
Well, in fact, they don't need to give me an explanation of why they enrich at 60%. What we need to ensure is that we have the necessary ability to inspect the activities there. They enriched at the levels that they declare. There are certain parameters, as you know, between an inspected state and the IAEA. They tell us this is what we are going to do, and then we perform the necessary inspections. So in that regard, in terms of motivations and reasons, which I believe is a little bit behind your question, we don't discuss that. For us, what is important, the only thing that matters is that we are able to inspect, that we are able to account for every gram of enriched material that is there. And this is the spirit of the exchanges, and we have been working satisfactorily in that regard. There have been other types of issues, and as you know, but they are not directly related to this particular issue.
Okay, well, that's interesting, right? Because that what he just said was in March of 2023, did not seem concerned about 60% enrichment, whereas the new bill from the House says that he was concerned about it in January. What he's saying here is Iran is letting us in, showing us what they've got, declaring their enrichment, and we actually go and verify. So if he's not worried, why is Congress? Is it possible then that the U.S. is setting a stage for the war with Iran based on a false flag? Cynical? But let's just ask that question. FBI Director Christopher Wray, right on cue, warned that Iran has plans to assassinate current and former U.S. officials and is also planning a cyber attack on the U.S. He said this to a Senate committee on Wednesday. Watch.
As the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism, the Iranians, for instance, have directly or by hiring criminals, mounted assassination attempts against dissidents and high-ranking current and former U.S. government officials, including right here on American soil. And along those lines, Hezbollah, Iran's primary strategic partner, has a history of seeding operatives and infrastructure, obtaining money and weapons, and spying in this country going back years.
Okay. Go ahead.
That just frustrates me to no end because it's like, you say Iran's number one, but like just because you've eliminated us from the list, that like we need to be on that list and we need to be number one because we do everything he just said and we do it in mass. We do it in more countries.
Right. Okay, David.
Yeah,
thank
but we
you
do
for
it for good.
It. Yes. Right. Right.
We do it for the for good.
For democracy.
We assassinate and spy for good.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, David, because I want to ask you, who is the only nation to ever successfully use a digital weapon against another nation that we know
about? Probably the United States.
It absolutely is the United States. And who did we do that against? Iran.
Russia?
Iran.
Iran?
We did this against Iran. So we're worried that they're going to cyber attack us.
We attacked their nuclear infrastructure.
We absolutely did. Let me just, for context, it was a Bush-Obama era weapon that we used to sabotage their centrifuges of their nuclear enrichment facilities with malware that we installed on their computers that they could not find. So yes, go ahead, David, ask your question.
Well, I was going to say, like, we tell other countries, like, you're making these weapons because you're afraid because we have the weapons and we have used them. They know our foreign policy. They know what we do around the world. Why would they not want to build up defenses against us? But it's like, if you build up defenses against us, we will attack you.
Right. Like, if you're receiving this briefing from Christopher Wray and he's warning you about a cyber attack from Iran, an appropriate question would be, oh, do you think that's retaliation for Stuxnet because we launched a cyber attack on them? Do you think that may be the case? No one asked that question, and we got away with it. Oh, and here's a for bonus. You want to go bonus round, David? Stuxnet, or Stuxnet, I'm not exactly sure how to say it out loud, was launched by the United States on Israel. Who helped the United States with that? Who was our partner in launching and creating Stuxnet? Any guesses?
Ronald Schwarzenegger.
No. Israel. Israel helped us with that. We all got away with it. No one ever condemned us for this digital weapon. And now we feel comfortable accusing them of playing these dirty tricks. What happens is that confidence on the world stage erodes in your words and actions when you do things like that. And then right on cue today, Russia announced that they have withdrawn from the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Now, why would they do this? Because these treaties are worthless. Russia says that this treaty was never ratified by the United States. They basically, like, it was a contract, and they sent their signed version over, and we didn't sign it and send it back. That's essentially what they're saying.
They know, based on history, that even if it's ratified, we don't stand by them. We do not stick with treaties. That doesn't matter what treaty we sign, we break it.
Right. Yeah. So they're saying we're no longer going to be involved in something with rules for them and not us. Makes sense. They do clarify that this does not mean that Russia plans to conduct nuclear tests, but rather that it, quote, equalizes the situation in the field of nuclear testing for Moscow and Washington. Nuclear war with Iran and an implosion of treaties with Russia around nukes. Did you vote for this? Do you want it? And are you buying this, these warnings about Iran? Now, the warnings about Iran go hand in hand with the war in Israel. Obviously, we've been talking about this for a long time, how the United States and Israel keep saying we think that Israel is connected to this violence from Hamas. We're going to find it and we'll get back to you. Clearly, they want a war with Iran. They've been saying so for a long time. If you do not want this, you need to tell your elected representatives because they voted for House Resolution 559, which escalates. Oh, one thing I meant to circle back around to, and I did not, is that the amendment says that the United States will oppose this by all means possible. Give me just a second to make sure I find this language, because I'm very confused on what that means, all means possible. Does that mean beyond a cyber attack, but military attack? Because I don't want that. I don't want to be dragged into war with Iran. Let me know what you think of this in the chat.
I mean,
below.
Militarily, is the only way that the war contractors are going to get rich, you know, make more money. So they've got to get those stocks up, you know, to get that, right, that profit for the end of the year and everything. So I would say militarily is the only way to go, unless they can justify a lot of money militarily for cyber protection. And then that's something we can't, you know, track or even understand. So that would be like a blank check, but that's not going to get, you know, missiles and Raytheon and all them any money.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what Edward Snowden did. He basically worked for a military branch, right? And he was a spy. Militarily now also means, you know, through digital weapons, given that we already successfully launched one by launching Stuxnet in the early 2000s. So, but that doesn't mean, you know, it's not like you can sit there and think, oh, well, I feel safer now because it just would be war of computers. Because those wars of computers can also mean turning off hospital infrastructure, turning off electricity grids. People die because they can't be kept on life support or be operated on or things like that. So this is scary stuff, you guys, and we have to fight against it and tell our politicians to stop this war rhetoric, or else we're just going to get more of it. So let me know what you think of that in the chat below. We have a lot more news to get to. If you're enjoying yourself, I don't think that's the right word. If you're enjoying being here, this is not news to enjoy. I did not bring you this to enjoy, but I brought you this for the better good of us all, I guess, for the good of all souls, as the Jesuits say. So if you are appreciating what you're getting here from Redacted, hit that like and subscribe button, please. So we're going to talk about the White House tackling Islamophobia, plus wind infrastructure as renewable energy. Is it a lot of hot air? It is. And plus, we're going to talk about some racist birds who need some new names, those racist birds. All right, but first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Indeed, because the thing about running your own business is that every single hire counts. And no hiring partner understands that like Indeed, so don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, Assessment, and virtual interviews. If you hate waiting, Indeed's U.S. data shows over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. Indeed knows that when you're growing your business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you can only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. Indeed knows that hiring needs to be cost-effective. So visit Indeed.com/redacted to start hiring right now. That way they know that we sent you. We really appreciate any advertiser who wants to continue to support independent media, because that is few and far between right now. So show them you appreciate it by visiting Indeed.com/redacted. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everybody. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. All right, well, people who have nothing to do with the war in Israel are being persecuted for either being Jewish or being Muslim, both. I dare say this may even be worse than the way that Russians have been prejudiced against since the war in Ukraine began last year. I don't like that word worse, because I don't like to rank human suffering. A lot of wars and arguments right now are coming around who's suffering the most, who has it worst, the Jews or the Muslims. But this is bad at this point. There's a lot of them having it equally bad. Watch a group of people harassing a Jewish student at Harvard and preventing him from just walking. Okay, what did that guy do other than being Jewish? He's not launching any bombs. He's not there. He's trying to go to school. Apparently, this has been reported that this group included even the editor of the Harvard Law Review, a man named Ibrahim Barmal. This is the same person who had previously won an award for compassion. So that wasn't a very compassionate thing to do. Again, you know, I know we're all super emotional about this war in Israel, especially. Emotions are high and people want to be acknowledged for that pain. I get it. But we're taking it out on people who are not decision makers, who are not warmongers, who have nothing to do with it just for their feelings. Anything we can do to turn down the temperature and speak for peace needs to be done. But don't worry about it, you guys, because the White House is going to solve this. Look at this. They launched a campaign to counter Islamophobia. They got it. Mm. They got this one. The initiative includes U.S. government efforts to counter Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, and related forms of bias and discrimination. What can they do? Well, one idea is peace. Stop bombing places where those people hearken from.
That's just one idea.
No way.
Talking about the anti-Semite
thing.
Palestinians or Semites. I mean, like, do they count? You know, some of them?
Yeah, I don't know. Now, here's what they say they're going to do. The peace idea that I just had, well, you could tell Philip thought that that was laughable. What they say they will do is develop a strategy. Cool. It's cool. Develop a strategy. Can't wait.
I'm convinced.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait. They'll focus group that. Again, maybe that strategy could involve not bombing Middle Eastern countries or illegally occupying them, such as our current illegal occupation of Syria. Not colonizing places is a good start to help stop prejudice against the people who live there. And, you know, speaking on behalf of all people and all human suffering is also a good start. It actually does seem like the U.S. is starting to get a tad bit uncomfortable with all the suffering of the Palestinians. Even if they refuse to ask Israel to de-escalate, you can start to see in these statements and appearances by, you know, the State Department and the White House, they are squirming. They do not like to be normalizing this violence. In fact, President Biden has called for a pause on Israel's strike on Palestinian territories. It's not a full-on ceasefire, but it's something. When asked about a ceasefire, the president kind of sort of agreed, saying, I think we need a pause. And a pause means time to get the prisoners out. Prisoners, yes, but also civilians. The president at least mentioned the attacks in the West Bank as something he didn't like, so maybe that's a bit of a glimmer of conscience there. Now, the Wall Street Journal reports that there are attacks in the West Bank that have ramped up by Israeli settlers. I want to talk about this a little bit more. So the West Bank, if you don't really know the geography, has nothing to do with Gaza. It's a separate place. What it has to do is that they are also Palestinians there, but they are not run by Hamas. They also were not involved in this October 7th attack. They are just a separate Palestinian territory. Here's what the president said. He says they're attacking Palestinians in places they're entitled to be, like they, the Palestinians, are entitled to be, and it has to stop now. That's what our president is saying. Go ahead.
Shouldn't they be entitled to be anywhere in there with their homes? Like they're entitled to be in this one area that they're worried about? Like, it's the rhetoric from the president during this whole thing has been
insane. No, he's saying they should be there. Like, they're being attacked in the West Bank where they... Yeah.
In the whole West Bank.
Right.
Okay. I thought it meant just that little area that those because, like, he said, I think it was yesterday on Twitter, that we can both support Israel and send aid to Gaza. And I'm thinking, you're supporting Israel with weapons to attack the people that you're going to send food and water to? Like, who's going to win that one?
Right.
Like, the rhetoric coming out of there is just, like, I don't.
But given that we have so little talk about one side suffering, I find that to be a small, like, crack in the wall that you can see light coming through, because we're at least saying those people are suffering and it's effing terrible. Now, what they're saying here is that Israeli settlers are attacking people in the West Bank. Well, what does that mean, Israeli settlers? Because it's not the Israeli ministry. It's not the defense ministry. It's not the official ministry. So what is this? So I reached out to our own correspondent, Dan Cohen, who has lived in Israel before, done many documentaries about Palestinians. And he explained it in a way that I thought was so good. He left me a voicemail that I thought I would just let you listen to my voicemail that was on my WhatsApp, if you don't mind. So listen to how we're calling Israeli settlers. Listen.
Israeli settlers, I mean, broadly refers to people like Israelis who live in the West Bank and occupied territory. So these ones that are carrying out these attacks basically see this whole war as an opportunity to ethnically cleanse, carry out pogroms in the West Bank, in West Bank Palestinian villages, in order to, you know, terrorize them and get them to flee. A lot of them tend to live in like little illegal outposts, is what they call them. Like an outpost is like, and it's even illegal by Israeli law. So you have settlements that are illegal under international law, but then, you know, the Israeli government rubber stamps it. And then you have what are called outposts, where it's like someone will just go build, you know, a little structure on a hilltop or whatever that's Palestinian, and it's illegal under Israeli law, but then the Israeli government will eventually rubber stamp it. And so it's all completely strategic in ways to surround Palestinian villages, terrorize them in order to get people to flee. There's been a whole lot more activity like that, including, yeah, straight up attacks on farmers, especially in different villages. That village that's mentioned in that Wall Street Journal article, Kusra, has been under attack for years. Back in like, there's one nearby back in like 2016, a very famous attack where Israeli settlers, they're called the Hilltop Youth, these ones who you know, go make outposts. They snuck into a Palestinian village called Duma at night and threw a firebomb into a house and killed the mom, the dad, and the two-year-old baby, and only a little boy who was like maybe five at the time survived. I was actually there. I did a piece on it, and I went and visited the kid in the hospital. So it's a, you know, it's a long-term thing, but with what's happening, there's a huge uptick in it. And those like super fanatic settlers who are carrying out these attacks, they've been, you know, previously they were kind of surveilled by the Israeli government and the police and the security services. However, in this, they've basically taken over the government in a large way. I'll send you a tweet that shows a perfect example. There's a guy who is one of them who was convicted, or he was investigated for burning a mosque, for burning an Israeli police vehicle, for brutalizing, assaulting Palestinians. And on October 6th, the day before the big Hamas attack, he was actually in a Palestinian village called Huwara, where he instigated a pogrom and they killed a Palestinian the day before this whole Hamas thing.
All right. So as part of my official reporting, I'm playing you my voice messages with Dan's permission. But I thought that was actually really great context, because it's interesting that the way he describes it, well, I wouldn't call them, what is the word that we're using here? Settlers. I would maybe call them terrorists. That's another word, right? I mean, I know that's a strong semantics. Now, he did leave another voicemail, which I didn't play you, to say it's a small group that a lot of times, if you're like a young Israeli family, you can find some pretty good neighborhoods in the West Bank that the Israeli government will subsidize you moving into, and you get a pretty good deal. So it's not all Israelis in the West Bank that are doing this, but there's a group of these extremist or settlers, or another word for it, maybe terrorists, right, that are operating and no one's doing anything about it except this sort of like, you shouldn't do this article in the Wall Street Journal. Now, about this, like, maybe they shouldn't be doing so much to retaliate on Palestinian civilians, Israel didn't seem to get that message. Overnight, Israeli forces reportedly struck the Jabalia refugee camp, claiming it was targeting a high-ranking Hamas commander there. Palestinian Authority said that almost 200 people died in that strike. The United Nations on Wednesday said this about it. They said this high number of civilian casualties and scale of destruction following Israeli airstrikes on Jabalia refugee camp, we have serious concerns that there are disproportionate attacks that could amount to war crimes. Could amount to war crimes, possibly. It's a philosophical question, I guess. when it comes to Israel. So let us know if these are the actions that you think are going to help counter anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. We could stop that, and those things will also probably decline, or we could just release a press release saying we are against it and then keep on doing what we're doing. What do you think? Which one's the better plan? Let us know what you think. So we have more news to get to. We're going to talk about wind farms and how they are killing whales. We spoke about this last week, and actually Clayton was like, what's that? Wind farms kill whales? I promised I would bring that research. I did, in fact, bring that research, and there's news about it, too. So it's a good time. We're going to talk about also renaming birds because so many of them are named after racists, and we cannot have that. That's probably been hurting your feelings for a long time. Don't worry, though. Ornithology societies are going to fix it right here and now. Before we do that, though, a couple things. I want to tell you about the Redacted store because we have a store that you can show your support for Redacted to the world. If you head on over to redactedstore.com, you can get these hoodies, these posters. You can get a mug that's railing against the mainstream media, plus my favorite non-pacifist peace extremist, because that is a saying that I made up and I will take it to the grave. In fact, I would really like it if that were on my gravestone. You guys remember that and tell Clayton later and make that happen if I
noted.
Suddenly die. Okay. Here lies Natalie,
if nothing
mother
else,
of three.
Yeah, if nothing else, we will come graffiti it on there for you.
That works. Okay. Or you know what I would really like, too, is maybe one of those, like, bat signals that has, like, non-pacifist peace extremists just, like, projected onto my gravestone, because I'm taking that one to the bank, guys. There's nothing you can do to ever convince me that violence is the answer. I just will not. So bring it on. Anyway, yes, if you'd like to wear things like that, head on over to redactedstore.com. Check out what we've got for you. All right. Remember the campaign from the 80s called Save the Whales? Well, environmentalists, they don't say that anymore because they actually want to pretend that whales are not being killed by green initiatives such as wind farms. But that's not true. Wind farms are killing whales. That is the whole point around a new documentary produced by environmental researcher Michael Schellenberger, shows that the government is pretending that wind projects don't kill whales, but they do. Watch this trailer.
1,000%, that is the boat. Let's bring it to a dead stop.
I saw another whale had washed up. It's becoming a pattern. Is it the windmills? Is it the pounding of the seafloor? How many whales is it gonna take?
There aren't many places where the North Atlantic right whale can go. It's destined to extinction.
It sounds like they're like, oh, it's like pile driving.
What the United States is looking at is thousands of wind turbines in an area that our whales, our dolphins, our marine life, where they live, where they migrate, where they breed.
It's only when they started going into the wind lease areas that we believe that the whales are dying.
So those red dots are whale deaths.
Precisely.
What a scandal.
So that's awful. Probably something you didn't know about up until now. But now, actually, Michael Schellenberger is calling this a victory because these wind projects are stalling. Not necessarily because of the whales, but we'll get to that. Danish offshore wind developer Ørsted has scrapped projects to develop wind farms off the coast of New Jersey. They say it's because of higher than expected write-down of its portfolio. This was the Ocean Wind 1 and 2 projects that would have put more than 200. Look at these. Can we leave that up just a little bit? Look how massive that is. 200 of them in the ocean, just 15 miles away from the New Jersey shore. Now the company, I don't wanna say like, oh my God, that in the ocean, because I have seen in person oil and gas rigs in the North Sea off the coast of Norway. So I know that things like that exist in the ocean. But at the same time, these are wind farms that you heard, they produce a lot of noise. They produce a lot of confusion for these whales. Now the company is saying, well, it's a supply chain issue and high interest rates, that's what tanked the project. The CEO said, well, he's really disappointed because we firmly believe the U.S. needs offshore wind to achieve its carbon emissions reduction ambition. Okay, but do those numbers work out? Does offshore wind really promise that it will replace current gas and have less of a planetary impact, a lower carbon output? Well, let's pretend for a second that we think that it's okay to kill whales and disrupt this environment if it means a reduction in carbon emissions. Just let's think about for a second, does the math work out? Well, according to Michael Schellenberger, it does not. Take a look at this from his book, Apocalypse Never. He says various studies have shown that the cost of integrating unreliable wind energy is high and rises as more wind is added to the system. For example, in Germany, when wind is 20% of electricity, its cost to the grid rises 60%. When wind is 40%, the cost rises 100%. Why would that be? Because of all the power plants, often natural gas, that must be standing by and ready to fire up the moment wind dies down, which that's how wind works. He says the extra power lines that have to be built to remote renewable energy locations and all of the extra equipment and personnel required to support fundamentally unreliable and often unpredictable form of energy. Now, what about land-based wind farms? Those certainly don't kill whales, right? They don't, because whales don't live on land. That might be news to you. I hope it's not. But they require deforestation because onshore, I guess we'll call them, wind farms require 450 times more land than natural gas power plants. That's crazy.
Wasn't there some big to-do about them killing birds?
Oh, I'm going to bring you that about the killing birds. Okay. You are onto something, sir. That's right. There is a lot of evidence of that, and also bat populations. And bats are a really important part of an ecosystem. So if bats can't kill predators, then everything falls apart. It's mayhem. Look at what Schellenberger says about that. Wind energy threatens birds, including golden and bald eagles, burrowing owls, red-tailed hawks, Swainson hawks. I don't know if any of these have racist bird names. We're going to get to them later. So just hold on to that when we talk about racist birds. But you see the list here, right? The expansion of wind turbines has particularly harmed the golden eagle in the western United States, where its population is already at a very low level. Now, look what the wind industry says about it. It's not us. It's actually, they say house cats kill more birds than wind turbines. House cats are a bigger problem. But whereas go ahead.
They're not combining those numbers. Like if we have the wind farms, then it kills twice as many or, almost like a third of as many. Like we have to eliminate cats now so that it balances itself out.
Right. Cats are a part of the ecosystem, whereas wind farms right. are not. Right.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Philip. Were you going to say something about that? Come to the defense.
That's just kind of funny. Yeah, because I'm just thinking about, like how many house cats pull down an eagle. Right. That's just not really happening.
No, I haven't seen it. I have not seen that happen. Right. And actually, he points out here, cats are killing small, common birds like sparrows, robins, and jays. Wind turbines kill big, threatened, and slow to reproduce species like hawks, eagles, owls, and condors. Plus, a lot of times the cats eat them or it becomes a part of this ecosystem in a different way. Whereas if they're just like, it's awful. Like he talks about here, rapidly spinning blades act like an apex predator that birds never evolved to deal with. So, they've evolved over hundreds of years, this person says, to fly certain patterns to migrate. You can't throw up a turbine and expect them to adapt. It's not happening. So they're basically like getting sliced in the air. That's awful, right? We know that small birds are victims to mice. We know that is part of the ecosystem, but adding this, like these new blades that are hurting them is not a part of our ecosystem. So get the heck out of here with your ideas of wind as a good energy alternative, a good renewable. It's not. In September, back to the whales, a whale named Faith was the 71st whale to die this year. She died near an Oersted site in Rhode Island. That's a bad optic. if you're Orsted, I don't think you would like that. Here's what Michael Schellenberger said about it. This is not normal. Death of whales have spiked since 2017, and the only significant change in this period has been the introduction of high decibel sonar and new boat traffic in previously untrafficked areas. This is the biggest environmental scandal in the world. At this rate, the U.S. government and the wind industry are going to make the North Atlantic right whale extinct. The government has corrupted and or covered up the science. Congress must investigate. So you can investigate for yourself by watching the new documentary that I told you about from Michael Schellenberger. It's called Thrown to the Wind. You can find it on Twitter and other places. And I suggest you do, because we live in a world now where environmentalists are the ones saying kill the whales, and the so-called climate change deniers are the ones that want to save the whales. So let me know what you think of that in the chat below. All right, well, we have one more story to get to. Before we do, I want to tell you about our redacted community, because the boys have been really busy over on the community. This is something that you can join for just about the price of a cup of coffee over at redacted.inc. Now, whereas I told you the newsletter is totally free, the show is totally free, those things are still true, but we do have a community that you can join for an extra fee, and you'll get access to more content, hangouts with us, more things that we're reading, more things that we're researching, just more. If you want more of us, absolutely. We invite you to join the redacted community for about the price of a cup of coffee per month. So check it out for yourself. I highly suggest you do, and we really appreciate your patronage and for joining us. Last week when we launched all these new graphics, the boys just kind of sat here for several hours and chatted with the redacted community, and it was lovely. I also popped in between whatever the heck I was doing with my children. Oh, I know what I was doing with my children. The older ones had a dance that I had to take them to and get them ready for. And that's what I do in my off time. And so anyway, join us for things like that. We appreciate it. All right. Well, these poor unsuspecting birds have been racist for years, and no one has done anything about it until now, thankfully. Here are some examples. This bird used to be called the McCown Longspur. Well, it is now the thick-billed longspur because it had been named after bird lover and Confederate general John Porter McCown. The small bird was renamed in 2020 because of his association, or its association with, no, not the bird. The bird was not associated with the Confederacy. The general was. The bird was associated with the general. You got it? Therefore, by transitive property, that bird is racist. That bird is a Confederate soldier. Also, General McCown was said to have fought in the Seminole Wars, which during which the U.S. forces tried to force Native tribes out of Florida. So the bird was getting a bad rap. Now, the longspur is among the list of about 80 birds that will be renamed by the American Ornithological Society. This is part of what they're calling the English Bird Names Project. They announced it on November 1st. So they're going to start renaming birds that have any kind of offensive names, according to these commitments. So here's the list of how they're going to go through it. They're just going to look for names that have a geographic jurisdiction or are named directly after people, along with other names deemed offensive and exclusionary, first focusing on those species that occur primarily within the U.S. or Canada. I guess because it's not for us to go to Africa and tell them what their birds are and whether or not they're racist, but maybe the way this is written makes me think maybe we'll get to it. We'll do that later. And tell, like, other continents whether or not their bird names are racist. This society also says that they will oversee the assignment of all new names, right? And they will actively involve the public in the process. So maybe you can vote for, like, I don't know, Yoda bird or whatever. They're not the only ones to do this, though, around specifically names of birds. The National Audubon Society was named after John Hames Audubon, founder of the New York City birding community, but also he was a slave owner who opposed abolition. So the New York chapter voted to change its name earlier this year. Here's their announcement about it. It Incidentally, they say Audubon chapters in Seattle, Madison, Portland, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. have also announced changes to their name or an intention to remove the Audubon from their name. Why? They say that the nonprofit acknowledges that John James Audubon's contributions to art and ornithology are significant and laid a foundation for the appreciation of nature and a conservation ethos in the country, but they decided his views and actions towards Black people and Indigenous people were harmful and offensive. So out with his name. They haven't announced a new name yet, so they're still using Audubon for now. It's interesting because Audubon is so synonymous with bird lovers everywhere. Like, that basically means bird loving. Go ahead.
If they remove his name, they can just be the society, but that doesn't really have quite the same ring. The society.
Well, that must be why it's taken them so many months to come up with something, because if you look, I'm trying to find the date on this. The date of this announcement, no, it's not here, was something like February or March is when they voted to change this name, but they're working on
it. I remember hearing an article about this a while back, but it wasn't super long ago. So it's definitely been about a year or so.
Also, the Audubon shearwater seabird will follow suit because that bird can't be racist, should not be associated with someone who owns slaves. So this bird will get a new name because look at that racist bird. Here's another one that will get a new name, the Scots Oriole. The bird was named after Winfield Scott, a Civil War general known for overseeing the forced relocation of Indigenous peoples in 1838, which is now known as the Trail of Tears. Go ahead.
I wonder if those birds will now be more accepted by other birds, like they'll actually start to make friends again because they're no longer going to be racist.
Right. Yeah, I wonder. Yeah. Or they will no longer be.
Scots Oriole. With the Scots Oriole, can't they just change, like retarget who Scott is? They don't need to change its name. They can just say, no, that's not that Scott. It's this other Scott we know.
Like Scotch Scotland. Tape. Yeah. I don't know. That cannot be the case. So to be clear, this is all for humans, presumably because maybe, I just wonder, I'm very curious because I'm not involved in ornithology circles on the internet. Were there bird lovers who were saying this is hurting my feelings because of the history of this name and I can't enjoy the pastime in the same way? Because of this fallback, of course, or is this, I don't know, obviously the things these people did were horrible to a lot of groups of people, so that's not to discount that, but is this an appropriate way to be inclusive, or is this maybe an unreal expectation that all historical figures were perfect, and then there's reason to cancel everybody, right? I want to know what you think of this.
Well, yeah, because it's like, how many degrees separated? Like if his best friend, Scott's best friend, was not, and they named something after him, it's like, where does it end? Like if we keep doing this to history, it's just never going to end.
Yeah. I don't know, but this one is not for the birds, clearly. It's for the humans. The birds did not know or care who they were named after. That's my belief. Maybe you believe something else, but maybe they would care if they knew. I don't know. I guess it just depends on how much you're anthropomorphizing the bird here, right? I don't know. This is a fun one to think about. I don't think we should get in any fights about this. So let us know what you think in the chat below.
I think we should start a movement here at Redacted to remove the term flipping the bird, because I feel like that might be a little bit more offensive to them that we use such an offensive sign as, under their name.
Right. Yeah, good point.
So, let's change the name of
flip.
Also, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say can we flip? Flip the.
Flip the finger. We just got the finger.
That hurts my fingers.
Also,
feelings.
Yeah, exactly. I want to petition them to change the name of the tit to the breast, so it's a little bit more. Okay.
There we go. Okay. Well, last night we ended the show talking about vaginos. I'm not going to take the bait on this one and talk about my boobs. I'm really good. Okay, that's where I should end the show, because I can go on a tangent here that would be inappropriate. So I like that. I like it a lot. So we're going to end right here. Thank you so much for watching this week. This is the last show of the week that's live. So join us back here on Monday. I can't say whether or not Clayton will join. He arrives where he is right now on Monday morning, and he may or may not join, depending on the jet lag. So we'll see. You may get us both. You may just get us, just me. It's a gamble. That's a chance you take. Please do sign up. Please do show up, though. Hurts my feelings if you leave when Clayton's not here. I need you to stay. Although, if you haven't and you've made that choice, you don't know that I'm saying this right now. So anyway, we'll see you here next week. Stay on the channel. We'll have content for you all week. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember to hit that like button, share, subscribe, all of the above. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.